So everybody's moving stuff to the cloud these days, including church offices, and they want those church membership databases out there as well so that multiple people can get to that information, either to update it or to share it. We're going to be talking about some of the top church management software systems and one in particular from Concordia that I think you're going to want to learn more about. Some great picks about photo sharing, some great listener feedback, and a lot more. You're going to want to stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs, and welcome back to Wells Tech. This is episode 289 for May 21st, 2013. Glad to be back with you, back in the States, and joining me as usual. Who didn't leave the States? Probably didn't even leave Sleepy Eye. Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Martin, and happy to have you home safely and not too jet-lagged, I understand.
No, this was great. I had a couple tips from some world travelers. I'm not a huge world traveler, at least not yet, and gave me some good advice as far as how to get through that first night so that you're not just totally wiped for the next week. So everything's good.
Good.
So I have no excuses if I didn't bring the A game today.
Things are good in Sleepy Eye, too. We are in the middle of graduation week, graduation of my oldest son. So this mom is not used to this kind of stuff and all the emotions and work and excitement that go along. So yeah, new experience.
Somebody college bound next year.
Yeah, heading off to school in the fall. So very exciting days. And we just feel very blessed and going to enjoy it.
So our topic of the day is one that comes up a lot in conversations, especially with church office type folks. When I first started in this position, Sally, that was probably one of the top priorities, is to find an answer to the ongoing question of church member databases. About 8 years, 9 years ago now when I started, that was just, they were available, but there were far fewer options than there are today. But all of those options were of the server variety. So there were or client server variety. There was nothing online whatsoever. Things are a lot different now. So now we have a whole category of products that either are hybrid, have an offline and online capability, or pure online, like the product that we're going to talk about today.
Right. I think that things are going to the cloud, and these people that are designing the software are understanding the importance of moving that direction as well, not just for storage sake or whatever, but for the collaborative nature that can be involved. And the fact that you can tap into that data, you know, obviously you use it in the church office for record keeping, but then you can use that data for other things that just your normal members can access and things like that.
Yep. So I think there are just, there's some key players that need access and probably in a good system should have access and responsibilities for keeping the database up to date. I think if it's just up to the church secretary or the single pastor there, maintaining the database, it's just not as, it's not going to be as valuable as if you involving certain people. So, you know, by putting it in the cloud, you have opportunity to distribute that where people can get to it, you know, from home, from different locations, versus having to come into the office. And there's just a lot of value to that. So I would think at a minimum, you'd want your church secretary, of course, you'd want your pastoral staff. But there are other people probably in the mix here, too, that are going to make use of that. Those people who would maybe use the database for communicating with members, so getting lists for, you know, either using a mail merge product or using the tool itself just to send out emails to different groups, maybe elders who are using this, where they're making elder calls or visitations, maybe your evangelism team who's keeping a prospect list on the database. None of that is really convenient or possible if you don't have it in an online fashion.
Right. But the double-edged sword there is when you go online, excuse me, you have to be really concerned about security. We're talking, some very private information that might be stored in a membership database, even just contact information that you wouldn't want to divulge, in a loose way. You want to make sure you have your security guards up. And obviously, these software vendors are uber concerned about that and building security into their online offerings.
Yeah, and that's usually the first concern that I hear when we talk about online anything, but certainly online member databases where you have both adult and children information. For instance, through our school's office, we offer an online student information system called PowerSchool. So, they take great lengths to secure that data, but it's really only going to be as secure as the strength of a password and how that gets shared around. So that's obviously a concern as you move into this area. I think this is where it's all heading. And as you'll hear with one of our favorite vendors, Concordia, they thought through that, but that there are certain safeguards that you have to think through, and you need some good policies and procedures in place to make sure that that data is in place. There are some off the shelf, or I would almost call some of these social network type tools that could be used in a similar fashion for communicating to members. We've talked about some of these in the past where you can have private groups of individuals, whether that be on Google Plus or Facebook with lists, those kinds of things. We've also talked about tools like the Table Project, where you have an intranet and can maintain member databases. There are member lists of some sort or another. But really what we're talking about is something a little bit more formal and structured and something that you would call your membership database per se.
Right, exactly. And I think what I want to do right off the bat is reference people to a magazine. It's called Christian Computing, and back in October of last year, they did an overview of a long list of church management systems. And there's a PDF version of their magazine available online, and you can read through their article, the pros and cons they found with each of the different systems that they reviewed. And they, like I said, it's a pretty exhaustive list. I was kind of surprised at how many they had listed. I just wasn't as aware of all of these different softwares that are out there. And I would say the vast majority of them, and they go into this in the article, are available with online components. Now, some of them are more local, and then you access it or pieces of it online. Maybe they have web apps or mobile apps that you can use on your smartphones or whatever. So it's kind of a mixed bag, but I would say you can see how many of them are moving to the online area to present the data.
Yeah, just a plug for Church Computing Magazine. That if you're not familiar with that, that's something that you'll definitely want to grab a hold of. I don't know if that's in print anymore or whether it's all online, but just do a quick search, or we'll put a link to it in the show notes. That it's good, it's worth the subscription, and because they have good articles like this and really kind of are in tune with what churches are needing as far as technology. They have some tips and tricks columns. They have software reviews, and they're much better than Sally or I going through all these softwares. I actually did that about eight years ago when I started. It was much easier then to do it than it is now because there's so many choices. And that kind of led us to the selection of our preferred vendor, although this isn't the only vendor out there, and it may not be the exact vendor for you, but Church Technology Solutions, the technology branch of Concordia, has a product that many of you use, I'm sure, Shepherd Staff. And for many years, up until last year or earlier even this year, they had just a standalone installable piece of software that you could put on your local machine, or you could actually set it up in a distributed fashion, put it on a server, and then install clients, which is the way we have it set up at our church. But that's a bummer. You have to maintain it. There's upgrades that come when a new machine gets online, yet that has to be installed, or when a machine crashes and you need to reinstall everything, that has to be another component that you install. The good news is they are keeping up with the Joneses, so to speak, Sally, and they've come up with something called Church 360 members. So they've taken many of the features of Shepherd Staff and kind of implemented them in an online fashion. Not everything, as we're going to hear from Peter Frank, who's our interview, but a lot of it, and the more, I think, more core functions. And I think they've come up with a decent start. So we're going to play first before the interview a quick promo video for Church 360 members. And then we're going to dive right into the interview with Peter about their product. We'd like to welcome Peter Frank, manager at CTS Concordia Technology Solutions, straight from the St. Louis area. Good morning, Peter. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you very much. I'm very good. How are you?
Very good. Thanks. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us and to talk about some exciting developments with CTS, the makers of Shepherd Staff. But before we jump into some of those product announcements, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're fairly new there, so tell us a little bit about Peter Frank and what he does there.
Sure. Well, I've actually been with Concordia Publishing House for almost 6 years now. I was in our bookstore division for the first 5 years or so. Okay. And last fall, I moved into CTS, and I've been working hard to catch up ever since. It's a longstanding history that we have in church management software. We've been making church management software since the 80s using our MS-DOS system. And it's amazing to think that computers seem to have really taken on in the 1990s, but we've been doing it more than that. So we have some customers who have been using us for almost 30 years. But then in 1994, we launched Shepherd Staff, and that has been our flagship software for the last almost 20 years now. And now we've got some new stuff. But for me personally, my passion is in management, and so I help manage the team. I'm not as much of a techie as some of the people on our team, but I do work with our software support technicians, our salespeople, and I know our customers will know many of them by name.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. How big is the team there, the CTS team?
We're around 10 people on the immediate CTS team. And then when you add in developers and other support, it's probably close to 20 people who work on our products on a regular basis.
Neat. And I'm assuming that the history of CTS was, you know, to put together software for predominantly your Lutheran churches, and now that I'm sure has grown and your audience and potential customers is beyond Missouri Synod.
Absolutely. Only about 45% of our customers are Missouri Synod, and then about 60% overall are Lutheran in some form. So that leaves 40% outside of the Lutheran churches.
Okay, great. A wonderful ministry. So, Peter, tell us a little bit about the electronic or digital products that CTS or CPH, I guess you're connected with, has and offers.
Well, with CTS, the primary focus is church management software, and then the products that go along with that are websites for churches. So in church management software, we have Shepherd Staff, which, as I said, has been our key product for almost 20 years now. We just recently launched Church 360 Members, and that is a web-based church management software with the focus being on membership, attendance, and contributions. And that launched officially in September. We've been working on that the last couple of years, and we had a soft launch with some early adopter customers back in 2010. And so the formal launch was in September, and it's got some great new features. As you can see, there is our website. Our tagline is "Turn information into insight." And the key goal behind all of our development on Church 360 members was informed pastoral care. We know that the pastors and church workers know this information about their members, but we want to make it as easy as possible for them to take that information and turn it into insight. And it highlights different trends, and then we'll get into that in a little bit more detail later on. Our next product in our Church 360 line is Church 360 Unite, which we just launched launched April 1st, and that's church website building software. And later on this summer, we will connect that with Shepherd Staff as well. So you'll be able to take either of the church management softwares and send your membership information into your website so that members can log in and update their own contact information and really bring that kind of connection or unite your church management software with your website.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
You probably have heard of Member Connect, which is a church intranet software that we've had for quite a while now that connects with Shepherd Staff too. And that many of our churches have used that for their church website, but the key purpose of that is communicating within their church. And so there's different groups and members can communicate with the church and with each other. We also have Member Caller, which ties in with that too, where you can use that for sending out mass voicemails to your church members. So if you have a bad snow day and Sunday service is going to be delayed or even canceled, you can send out a voicemail to everybody and let them know. Now, CPH as a whole is moving more and more into software, and I'm sure many of you have heard of Lutheran Service Builder. That has been a key product for us over the last few years, and that's taken our new Lutheran Service Book hymnal and making it so that churches can put together their worship services and pull prayers and tie it in with the hymns. And that has been so popular that we've branched that idea out into confirmations. We have Confirmation Builder, and it pulls different pieces of information from our many different confirmation curricula and allows you to customize what you want. So if you like something from one book and you like something from another, you don't have to buy both books. You just sign up for Confirmation Builder and you can print out as many copies of each of those pieces of information from there. Bibles. Yeah, that'll be going through some changes too in the future. People have really liked it and have wanted additional features added to that, so you'll see some changes with that soon too. Mm-hmm. Bible Study Builder is along the same concept, which pulls from different Bible studies that CPH has produced over the year, and it's really good for if you're writing your own study, you can pull questions from different previously printed studies and then print out as many copies as you'd like. Another new product that has launched recently is our online learning software, Bible 101. And that's just the beginning stages of that product where churches can purchase it for individual use, or individuals can purchase it for themselves, or churches can purchase it for their members to use and get a group rate. And they can log in and start working through this these different lessons. And that's going to be really developed over time. And we're having a lot of focus groups and user feedback on that to bring that to fruition. And then also launched recently is My Sunday Solutions for church musicians, where they can log on and have different introits or little pieces. It's a subscription base, so they can go back to these pieces as often as they want, whereas they may not want to pay per piece. They sign up for that subscription and they can go in anytime. I know our organist at our church will use his iPad wherever he goes, and so organists could just log into the account from their iPad and play it right there.
Wow. So. We talked about that one on the Wells Tech podcast when it was launched. We thought that was a pretty cool product.
Yep. Yeah, we've got some very good feedback from our customers already. So, mm-hmm.
So let's spend a little bit of time talking about one of those products, and that's Church 360, which some would maybe characterize as an online member management system, similar to what Shepherd Staff does, but in an online way. And I'm assuming that was one of the challenges that you had is, you know, your customers were comfortable housing member data inside their four walls, but now you have a product that, while it provides benefits with access, it also maybe has some security concerns for, well, how safe is my data if I'm hosting this in the cloud?
Sure, absolutely. And I think that's what it really comes down to for a lot of customers is the ease of use by being able to access this information from the road versus that security issue of whether or not it's secure. And we use the same kind of security systems that banks use.
Sure.
It's incredibly secure. We store it offsite from our building using a third-party software or third-party party solution that's what they do, is they house servers. And so this does add that extra level of security for churches, that they can't have somebody break into the church and steal their computer. Sure. Or if there's a natural disaster and the church burns down, they still have all this information saved.
Right. Big benefits there. So explain, maybe a lot of our listeners are familiar with Shepherd's Staff. Explain some of the maybe similarities that you're going to see between Shepherd's Staff and this new online product, Church 360.
Sure. Well, it comes down to the core about membership information. So membership, attendance, and contributions. That's still the main thing for Church 360 members, just like you've seen in Shepherd's Staff. Now, Shepherd's Staff has had 20 years of development and customer suggestions, and it's become rather complex. And when we set off building Church 360 members, we decided that we didn't want something that was very complex. We wanted you to be able to start using it from day one. It doesn't really require too much training, half hour to an hour walkthrough, and you'll be able to pick it up. Rather than making it a rigid software that does certain things just the way they were designed to do, Church 360 members gives you the tools to use it how you see fit. So a perfect example is tags. Tags can be whatever you want them to be. So if you wanted to assign your elder groups to the individual members, you can tag them with that specific elder, and then you can use that tag to report and say, for this elder group, what are the attendance records or the contribution information? Or you can combine multiple tags. So let's say you use tags to highlight different skills or talents, such as woodworking. You could say, okay, who in our church in this elder group has the talent of woodworking skills? So it's designed to be flexible, to not necessarily say how to use it, but to help you figure out the best way for your church.
Cool. Very cool. What kind of reaction have you gotten so far with the launch?
We've gotten pretty good reaction. There's some people that are missing certain features in Shepherd Staff, and so that's where it comes into the idea of, well, we didn't want this to be as complex. I think that as people dig into it more, we kind of use the Facebook mentality. The more you spend time on Facebook, the more you find that you want to do. Mm-hmm. With 360 members, the more you're in there and adding information, the more you can do with it. And so I think our churches are really starting to like that idea of, oh, well, I could use this for this purpose, and it works out perfectly. So there is a little bit of a learning curve in terms of how to be creative with it, but customers love the simple screens, the bright colors. That Shepherd Staff has a little bit of a Windows feel, because it's a Windows product, and for our Mac users out there, they really like the Church 360 members feel, because it's meant to be more comfortable for them.
And what do you have planned for the future, Peter? What kind of new development will you be doing with Church 360?
Well, one of the biggest things that 360 members lacks, and it is intentional, is the financial components. So Shepherd Staff can be purchased without the finance module. Right now, we don't have the finance portion of Church 360 available, and that'll be coming out at the end of December. It's called Church 360 Ledger, and that'll integrate very well with 360 members. They're built on the same platform, but they are going to be separate products, because a lot of smaller churches choose not to use the financial component, or they may have a different third-party software. But Church 360 Ledger is going to be built with the idea that churches either have a finance expert or they don't. And so there will be two different modes that you can use. One that uses all the financial jargon, credits, debits, and shows you it in that way that the financial people are used to. And the other will be using layman's terms, deposits, withdrawals. So we're going to try to make it as easy to use for each customer type, because we know that some churches just aren't blessed with having a financial expert in their congregation who volunteers their time.
Very good. So, a lot of our listeners are probably wondering at this point, well, I'm using Shepherd Staff and I like using Shepherd Staff. What's the future of that product?
Well, Shepherd Staff is still our key product. We are still putting development time in. We just had our 2013 release at the beginning of the year. We're working on a feature pack that'll be released in just a couple weeks, if not sooner than that. And development has already started on Shepherd Staff 2014. The key feature of that will be a check-in service, which is straight from the customers. They said they really need that. And so we're going to continue to develop Shepherd Staff. As long as people are still using Windows-based products, Shepherd Staff will have a life. So I see that continuing to be a strong product for us for years to come. So sure. Shepherd Staff users, have no fear. We'll still be with you for a long time.
Runs on Windows 8, I assume?
It does. Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
And we're looking at ways to optimize that too, add features that, you know, with Windows 8 we never had the opportunity before.
Cool. Circling back, so to speak, on Member 360 pricing model, what does that look like?
Pricing model is based on the number of member households that you have. There's been some confusion on that because some churches like to add as many households as they want for all their visitors. And that is not restricted. You can still have that many, but we're trying to do it based on the size of the church. And so if you have up to about 150 member households, the pricing is very comparable to with Shepherd Staff, the support contract that you pay annually. So there you can see it on the screen right there. If you're a smaller church, it would be $19.99 a month. If you're a much larger church with more than 650 member households, that goes up to $89.99 a month, or the annual plan of $971 a year. And we find this very comparable with similar products in the church management software market. It's just a little bit of a change for our Shepherd Staff users because they're used to the one-time fee and then possibly the support contract. So it is a little bit of a shift, but there is more ongoing expense on our end for paying for the servers and the frequent updates. With Shepherd Staff, you get an update once, maybe twice a year. With Church 360 members, you're getting updates almost on a weekly basis.
Sure.
And you do one or the other. You don't do both. Is that typically the case?
Correct. Yeah. When we approach a church who's looking for a church management software solution, we talk to them about their needs and try to help them figure out whether Shepherd Staff or 360 members is better for them. Now, once you add in some of the other pieces like 360 Unite, you'll be able to say, okay, well, that's a completely different product that'll work with Shepherd Staff or with members, whichever you prefer. But yeah, it's one of the other, Shepherd Staff or 360 members.
Okay. In closing, yeah, Peter, anything that strikes you about new products coming out of CPH that you're particularly excited about?
Well, obviously my product with 360 Ledger and especially 360 Unite, those I think are some of our neatest products. 360 Unite is really very unique in the marketplace in that it combines your website with your church management software, allows them to talk with each other, and gives members the opportunity to log in and find out information that may not have currently been available on a church website because of security issues. After that, in the coming years at CPH, we're looking at an online version of Lutheran Service Builder. And then the Bible 101 concept, we're branching off into a different idea with called the Living Word. And there's some pretty exciting stuff on that. I think it'll be a little bit time in coming. But those are the key things right now.
Cool. You got a lot of plates in the air. So
absolutely, technology changes.
That's exciting. Yeah, that's exciting. You've probably heard over the last 10 years probably when are you going to have an online version, and now that's become a reality. So
yep,
that's
cool. Absolutely.
All right, Peter. Thank you for your time. Appreciate you taking time out of that busy schedule, and we'll be following that and looking forward to maybe hearing back on how those are going in the future.
Great. Thank you very much for having me. I'm happy to be on here talking with you.
Okay. Take care. Our thanks to Peter for his time with us. Very informative. He's certainly obviously an advocate for the software, but in my short time with it, he gave me a trial account and we walked through it a little bit. I'm pretty impressed with what they've done. It's a nice user interface. And it seems pretty snappy, and I'm very excited to see where this goes. I think there's some definite benefit. I think for the most part, there's kind of a breaking point as far as the size of church that's going to be able to make use of that. But I think a majority of our churches are middle to smaller size churches are going to be able to take advantage of this. It makes economic sense. And certainly the distributed way this goes online and the things that you can do online versus kind of the closed system that the Shepherd Staff is makes a lot of sense for a lot of our churches.
Yeah, I will definitely have a link in the show notes to 360members.com. So you can go there, and when you're on their site, there's a big button where you can request a live demo. So if you just want to take it for a test drive and see what it's like, go ahead and make contact with Concordia and try their live demo.
And I just an encouragement just to close our conversation on church membership systems, CMSs. They all have trials, so I wouldn't even begin to think about putting one in place until you really kick the tires on some of these, because ease of use is going to be a big thing, because a lot of our churches have a volunteer force that works in some of these areas. It needs to be easily picked up and trainable, and you just can't have something overly complicated. So I would say, general rule of thumb, get by with as simple a system as possible. Versus, you know, starting at the top saying, well, I need all the bells and whistles. You probably don't, or it's probably not a maintainable situation, especially if you have just a volunteer workforce. So just keep that in mind as you go forward.
I think one more encouragement is for congregations that are using Shepherd Staff, you're going to see a lot of parallels. And so if you're comfortable with the way they define things, and then adding, as Peter said in the interview, that whole ability to tag things and basically...
That's a nice addition to the online.
Split the data however you
want.
Gives
it a little bit more flexibility. And then you still have the power of the groupings that that you can custom build. So
absolutely.
Very good. Sally, let's move along to our news in tech section. There was, we probably had a lot to choose from. It was actually pretty hard to just pick one or two items, but Google had their I.O. conference, which is their developer conference, last week, and came out with a bunch of new stuff, especially related to Google+.
Yeah, and so I did a little searching, and I think this CNET article has a great video overview of the changes specifically to Google+. If you are a Google+ user, or maybe if you rely on it to record a weekly podcast, say, you probably want to get up on what the changes are. We were a little surprised as we launched our podcast that things were in different places. And so good to just walk through the feature updates, and I think this is a great place to start. There are a few other articles on CNET that I'll link to, some tips for navigation and things like that that they've made available. So if you're kind of shocked by the Google+ interface changes, then check out our links and watch the short video, and hopefully that'll help you.
Some of the biggest innovations happened in the photos area, where they increased the space. I think you can do up to 50 gigs. And then they had some very neat automated features where it'll go through your pictures and actually pick the best ones, and we'll group them together. Looks to see if people are smiling, looks for over under exposure, looks for blurriness, kind of weeds out the bad ones that we all take, and brings the cream of the crop to the top. And I'd say it does a pretty good job. So try it for yourself if you're a Google Photos user.
And you are a Google Photos user. I'm going to have to watch your account and see if you post any new pictures from Hong Kong. Did you take pictures on this trip?
Sadly, not.
Oh, bummer.
I was in that office for most of that time. And next time.
Okay.
Next time. So I did not get any good shots this time. Let's move on to our picks, Sally.
Well, I'm starting a brand new series, Martin. It's summer vacation time, and I thought it would be good to spend a few picks on summer vacation technology. And this
so
week,
you have your own series within
that's
a series.
That's right. You guys are benefiting from my summer vacation preparation. And this week, I want to talk a little bit about some of our favorite podcasts that we take along as a family to listen to when we're in the car for, say, a 1,000-mile trip to Mississippi. So starting with, and I'd say all of these I'd categorize as family friendly. You know, you're always going to have to use caution, and there may be things that come up that you wouldn't deem entirely appropriate. But I think for the most part, you're going to be in pretty safe territory with these three podcasts I'm going to recommend. The first one is from the How Stuff Works channel. And there's a whole slew of podcasts from the How Stuff Works people. This one in particular is called Stuff You Missed in History Class. And, you know, I didn't grow up
That's a pretty big category for me.
I wasn't a huge fan of history growing up, but the podcast is just excellent. They come up with the neatest stories and tell about, you know, in a 20 or 30 minute format about some really intriguing historical events.
So is it kind of like a Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story kind of stuff?
Or
this
it is.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've learned about everything from, you know, Indian princesses and Indian princesses that were white people stolen by the Indians and assimilated into their tribe and things like that, to Australian criminals, to old English monarchy and all kinds of...
See, one there, the changing tides of fashion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All kinds of stuff. There was one about bloomers and underwear at one point. I mean, it's just all over the board, but fun and interesting. They keep it real light, and they have a listenership that writes into them with ideas of things to research and all kinds of stuff. They're on Twitter. They have a Facebook page. You can, you know, give them ideas in that way.
Is that a weekly thing?
It looks like they put out 2 shows per week.
Okay.
And like I said, they're around the 20 minute time frame.
I got to write that one down. That sounds interesting.
It is. It's intriguing. It keeps us learning things while we're in the car stuck for a long time. Speaking of the car, another favorite of ours is the Car Talk podcast. Car Talk has been on National Public Radio for
long,
I don't
time.
Know, 25 or 30 years. And actually, the guys behind it, Tom and Ray, just recently retired from doing the show actively. But they have 25 years of archives, so they're recycling older shows. These guys are hilarious. They've taught us a lot about our car. It's funny, I have 3 sons, and if our car makes any noise at all, they're diagnosing it based on Tom
based
and
on
Ray.
Talk.
Yeah, because they often will focus on the sounds the car is making and have the listeners repeat the sounds on the air. It's really funny. They have a weekly puzzle. They just keep it real light, and we laugh a lot when we listen to Car Talk. And then the third one, because one pick isn't enough and 2 isn't even, is NPR Sunday Puzzle. This is part of the NPR regular Sunday edition newscast that they do, basically, but they do a little short, maybe a 10-minute long spot called the Sunday Puzzle, and it's hosted by my friend Will Shorts. I don't know if you're familiar with Will Shorts. He's the coolest guy. I learned more about him after starting to listen to the podcast, and there's actually a documentary type film called Wordplay that focuses on Will Shorts. But Will designed his own college degree on puzzle making. It's called Enigmatology, the study of puzzles, and he has an actual degree in that. He writes the or edits the New York Times crossword puzzle that comes out, and he comes on to the audio version of Sunday Puzzle, and they do it as kind of a game show. So they'll ask a question, and the next week they'll draw from all the people that answered correctly and bring that person on the show to answer the live puzzles. And typically, they're word-type puzzles. Sometimes they throw different things in the mix. It's always something different every week, and they keep it real light and funny, and we like to play along. So as he's asking the contestant the question, you can be answering it as well. And sometimes we do okay, and sometimes not so great. They're pretty hard. But it's fun for our family to listen to Sunday Puzzle. I don't listen every week. I store up a whole bunch, like for our trips, and then we listen to, you know, an hour's worth of puzzles or whatever, and work our way through the questions that they ask for the next week and hear the answers and things like that. So that's it for my summer vacation tech for this week, but just wait till next week. I've got more in store for you.
That's a cool idea, Sally. You gave us some some great tips there. I've heard the same thing about Car Talk, you know, for years, saying you got to listen to this. I never have. So now maybe is the time I have to do this. So
it's funny. They keep us laughing.
Cool. All right. My pick, let me share my screen with the class, is actually related to some of the news that we had. And that was that Google Plus added, you know, some new functionality to their Photos app. My pick is actually the photo app that I use, or the online photo storage tool that I use, and that's Flickr. Flickr did a whole new revamp of their interface. Flickr, for a number of years now, which is a Yahoo property, has been kind of characterized as a an old school online tool. So I think they're trying to get out from under that moniker and do some cool things that maybe the cool kids will want to engage in again. And so you're looking at my photo stream. So they obviously changed this a lot. It used to be just little, all the boxes were square. So what they've done is they'll look at your photo stream and they'll put together a collage automatically. So you're seeing, if you're watching, some of my photos from my trip, recent trip to Santa Fe. So I took a nice panorama, you know, from a top of a hike we went to. So that's in a, you know, a large box, you know, wide box at the top. And then they kind of push all the other photos in, you know, where they make sense. And they group photos together based on coloring and so on and so forth. Just a nice job at what they did here. And the other thing that is kind of cool that they did was they upped the limit for a free account. So with just a free account, you can go to 1 terabyte of storage.
Wow.
And you can store original photos. And now with our SLR, DSLR cameras, you're talking 12, 18 megabytes per shot. So you're going to need that kind of storage. But they'll store it in the original resolution. But then what Flickr does, which I like, is they present you with all kinds of different sizes for people to download. So the difference between that and the Pro account, which I believe is now $50, which I use, and we'll publish an article here from PC Magazine, is that you won't have any ads if you pay the $50 a year. So that's the ad-free version. But for free, right out of the box, you get a terabyte, which is just a ton of space. There are some limits with the, here they've got some limits, support 537,731 photos in full original quality was the estimate that'll fill up a terabyte. So that's a lot of photos. You do have a limit of 200 megabytes per photo, which should not be any problem. You can also upload 1080p HD video up to a limit of 1 gigabyte and playbacks of up to 3 minutes each for those. So they're kind of come, they've kind of come into the 21st century here with some of their technology and made themselves more relevant once again. They are competing, of course, with Google and some of the announcement that Google just made. But I love Flickr. And one reason that I was a pro user is they had, at that time, unlimited uploads. So you could store as much as you want. Now, they've capped that for 1 terabyte for new users, but that should be plenty. So that's a good deal. So if you're looking for places to store your photos, even if you store them on a local hard drive, it's not a bad idea to get those in the cloud so that you've got a backup. And you can also more easily share them when they're online as well. So my pick of the week is Flickr. That's F-L-I-C-K-R. No E in there.
Mm-hmm. Got the internet spelling going on. If you happen to sign up for my basic image editing class at Martin Luther College this summer, this is one of the tools we make use of, Martin. And I really like Flickr for a reason you didn't mention, and that is the ability to be in groups. And that's what we play with this in this class that I teach, because you can share within your groups
privately.
And that's a nice thing. We have a pro account for our church. We'll have to evaluate whether we need to keep it pro or not, but we use it for posting all our church images, just so we don't have to manage all that image storage on our own domain. We use Flickr for that. So lots of positives with Flickr.
But you found a negative there too, didn't you, with the whole slideshow thing?
Yeah, I'm not finding the ability to embed slideshows on our website at this point with the change.
I'm sure that's got to be there somewhere, or will be.
If it's not there now, I'm guessing that'll be added back quickly.
I can't imagine why they would take that out. That's just good promo for Flickr.
Exactly.
So maybe that, you know, I would think that that might be something they pull out of the ad-supported ones, but if you already got the pro account, I can't imagine why they wouldn't let you do
that. Right. So I think there'll be a few bugs to work through, but I bet they resolve that kind of stuff very quickly.
Yeah. I also like Flickr because I use Lightroom, and there's a plugin for Lightroom where I can keep those in sync so I can do my editing in Lightroom, and then it'll automatically upload them to Flickr. So that's another piece of the puzzle there.
Yep, keep them connected to the cloud, huh?
Yep. Sally, we should probably remind our listeners of Wells Tech Camp coming up in September in New Ulm, Minnesota.
Yep, the date is September 14th. It's a Saturday event, and we have a full day of free activities planned for you. But rather than us tell you about it, maybe you should watch our brand new promo video.
And we give our thanks to Sally for putting that little promo together. Nicely done, Sally.
Thank you, sir. I'm looking forward to meeting lots of Wells Techers. We have great registrations already, but there's plenty of room for more. So please plan to join us.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Shall we move along to community feedback?
Sure. Just a few things to share this week, starting with an article that someone tweeted to us called "The Case Against Grades. They lower self-esteem, discourage creativity, and reinforce the class divide." So they're kind of going through several studies in this article. It's on the Slate website about how students are demotivated by the fact that they're going to be graded on activities, and then, you know, contrasting that to the positive results they see when the students are just know that it's a free activity. It's not something they're necessarily going to be graded on. So I think this is definitely a time of transition for education in terms of education technology and lots of transformation going on there. And this person is making an argument for evaluating our grading system at the same time and seeing if it's really outdated. And so, interesting article. I hadn't thought about this before, but lots to think about through the case studies they mentioned there.
Yeah.
Good. I read an article on free technology for teachers. Our friend Richard Byrne has found one alternative to recommend because, as we know, Google Reader is going away at the beginning of July. And now if you actually access your Reader account, they'll pop up a little message that says, remember, this is going away July 1st, which is sad news for those of us that have relied on Google Reader for our RSS feeds. There's a new kid on the block. It's called the Old Reader.
Yes.
And in contrast to some of the options that have been suggested, like Feedly and Flipboard, which are very slick magazine style, almost look like your Flickr page you were showing a few minutes ago with lots of imagery and things. We know that the existing Google Reader format isn't that way. And this Old Reader kind of tries to capture the more textual, just listing the headlines and things like that, the organization structure. So it's more of a takeoff on the existing Google Reader. And I quickly downloaded my Google Reader takeout file and uploaded it to the Old Reader, and I was pleased with the results. I think it's definitely a viable alternative for those of you that are looking to duplicate the Google Reader experience. This may be an option for you.
Nice.
And let's
see. I've not heard of it before. I think give that a look.
It's theoldreader.com. I'll have a link in the show notes. And then finally, Perry Lund, who's our Pinterest friend, made a pin on our Wells Tech Pinterest board called "How Safe is Cloud Computing?" We've been talking a little about cloud computing in this show and with online member databases in particular. And this infographic just kind of looks through some of the questions you should ask. Why go to the cloud? What are the security risks that are involved? You know, where are these servers located? All kinds of different things like that. And one comment Perry made was, you probably have to be most concerned about employee security because that's one of the weakest areas. People just kind of take for granted that it's a secure site and they don't take a lot of precautions when they go to the cloud. And so maybe educating employees and things like that is a big component of going to the cloud. So, and employees in this case could be church office staff that, sure, that are, you know, comfortable with the data that they've served, that they've had on a local server, for instance, and going to the cloud, they aren't thinking of it in different terms, that is actually on the internet and there are security concerns around that.
Sure. So, good.
So, yep.
That's it for community feedback. If you would like to contribute and share what you know or questions that you have with everybody else who listens or watches the show, wellstech.wells.net is the place to go. Across the top right, you will see a bunch of icons. Click on the icon of your choice, whether that be Pinterest, Facebook, Twitter. You can send us an email, wellstech@wells.net, or if you're back on that page, just click on the little blue bar on the right side and leave us a voicemail. We would love to play it on the air and hopefully answer your question or begin the quest to answer your question.
Yep.
Next week, Sally, I'm excited because it is our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, Jason Schmidt, joining us for a look at what's on our bucket lists for this summer, technology learning-wise. So what do we want to bone up on this summer while we have all that free time and figure out what we need for the coming school year, perhaps? There's a lot of things, a lot of options. So you're gonna hear from all three of us and maybe some other suggestions that you might want to put on your bucket list.
Yep. Got to work on that bucket list.
That's right. Sally, thanks again for all your work to make this podcast what it is. Wouldn't be the same without you. In fact, it wouldn't happen without you.
Sure it would.
Let's close with the music of Corbin Creek. There's Psalm 46. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Done. I'll be exalted in the nations and over all the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. The Lord of hosts. The God of Jacob is our